I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. Lighthouse is celebrating 22 years in business and just entering our ninth year of doing open line programs. We have a few exciting new changes that have taken place. First, we have our new 2016 open line format that comes with the launching of our website. You can now take a look and go into our archive of past topics on the publication event tabs. If you have a member of an association and would like to make that available to them, please let us know. Plus our new book, Cracking the Business Code, and Paul has a chapter in there. It's available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage. Our topic today is the decision-making process, finding your sweet spot. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting your program today. We have a few housekeeping items. We're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, executive onboarding for success, operational productivity improvement, and exploring global options for expanding your business. In fact, we just opened an office in Taiwan, so if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas of how to interact with a U.S. company, just let us know. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is always in response to a number of calls we get for different topics that everyone would like to address, both domestically and globally, so we can stay ahead of the game and face today's business issues, but also look towards tomorrow. Our goal is to make this an interactive program on your screen. You'll see an area. You can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. So during the program, you may want to write down a couple of questions, either send them in or have them prepared for at the end of our program. Our special guest with us today is a very close personal friend, business friend, mentor. We'll just continue from here. Who is Paul David Walker. Paul is one of the few CEO coaches who has worked with numerous Fortune 500 CEOs and their key staff members for over the past 25 years, along with many mid-cap organizations. Some of the organizations that Paul has worked with include Starkist Foods, Vaughn's Grocery Stores, New York Life, Anne Klein, Rockwell International, countless manufacturing, global utilities, service, and various consulting organizations, and companies at all different sizes from startups to the larger global organizations. Paul is the founder of Genius Stone Partners and works with both domestic and international companies to improve their bottom line today and planning for the future. Paul is the author of the best-selling book, Unleashing Genius, and his new book, Invent Your Future, Seven Imperatives for the 21st Century. If you haven't read both, I'd recommend getting them right away. They're both amazing books. It'll provide you as business leaders with a lot of information and ideas that you'll need in order to stay competitive, ahead of the game, and also deal with whatever scenarios are presented to you. I feel so privileged to have Paul with us today to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic will be Doing Business in China, an Exporting Opportunity. Paul, welcome back to Open Line.
Well, thank you for that introduction. I look forward to our conversation. And how do you make good decisions? And the thing you're probably wondering about is after the semicolon, it says finding your sweet spot. I want to talk about that first, because if you look at this next slide, life is full of momentum. You know, the stock market has momentum. The marketplace has momentum. You have momentum as a person. And you can't change that momentum quickly, but you can influence that momentum. So when you're making decisions, one of the important things to think about is, well, what is the momentum going on at the moment for me as a leader, and what is the momentum going on in terms of my business, and where can I affect that flow of cause and effect? So I'm going to use an analogy here in the next slide that us people in California are familiar with, it's surfing. But what I'm referring to is knowing yourself first. What is your momentum? What are your bad habits? What are your good habits? And what's most important? What is your genius? What is your natural gift, your calling, if you will? I know in the recent book, it's called Invent Your Future, Starting with Your Calling. So if you don't know who you are, you don't know what you do well, you don't know what your team does well, you don't know what your business does well, you're not going to place yourself effectively in the momentum of cause and effect. And so the first step is really understanding yourself and who you are. Know your genius. And what I mean by genius is collaboration, conscious collaboration with the flow of cause and effect. That's what a genius does. That's what we do when we're in the zone. That's what we do when we're successful at anything. And then third, once you know that, and you know, that's a long story. It's a lifelong process. But if you're a leader, it's got to be one of your most important imperatives to know yourself. I mean, I don't know if you ever watched Seinfeld, but there's this one issue where Elaine decides to get out on the dance floor and lead her company in dancing. And she's a horrible dancer, but she doesn't know it. And of course, everyone's laughing and snickering. And the whole episode is about how do we tell her, right? So you don't know what you're good at. You're likely to lead with things that are habitual and that you're not good at. So what that takes is practice. You have to know what you're good at and practice using it. How often have I worked with leaders who are trying to overcome their bad habits and they're leading with their bad habits, or their bad habits worked in the past and they think they'll work today? This is the most dangerous part of leadership. People always say, well, is there any one common thing, Paul, that leaders trip up on? I say, yeah. It's thinking the things that worked 2, 5, 10 years ago are still going to work today. That's the biggest problem most leaders have, honestly. And it takes practice, just like learning a new golf swing. You know it's right. I mean, the coaches just told you that. He hits a ball. I went golfing with my son. He hits the ball like 300 yards. And it takes practice. I know how to swing, but if I don't practice, I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm not going to get any better. Same is true with leadership. So
well,
now.
A question came in. I'm going to summarize this. Many CEOs and key executives, they may get up and do meditation or exercise or do whatever they do to stay, mm-hmm. to get focused, let's say, in the moment, for instance.
Yep.
And then going to work, or they get an email or get a call or something, and everything's just going fine, and they know themselves inside out, very confident. Then all of a sudden something happens. They get that email. They get their call. They get somebody knocking on the door. And then they're thrown off. How do you get back on the saddle really quickly? Because fear takes over.
Yeah, fear is a habitual process, a fight or flight process. And part of the practice is practice moving from flight or fight to being in the present moment, to being in the zone. I mean, athletes do that all the time. One of my mentors was a sports psychologist, and his job was to teach professional athletes to get into the zone. And if you've watched sports a lot, you know that there are some athletes that rise to the occasion when there's a big issue, a big problem. One shot left to win the game. And there's other athletes that don't. They clutch. You've got to practice your own psychological process of moving from fear, from any kind of fight or flight response, into the present moment. You've got to practice.
So if the horse bucks, the saddle's on pretty well, and you can re-grab it and hop, get back on it and stabilize yourself versus falling over and getting dragged.
Yeah, and in horseback riding, you got to practice that. It's not just knowing how to do it. You can read 100 books on how to do it, but you got to practice it diligently in everything you do, not just at work, but at home. Practice moving from a disruptive state of mind, a fight or flight syndrome, into a peaceful, centered place. Otherwise, your habits will dominate.
Over.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
This next slide, you can see knowing when you're knowing when you're knowing.
And
the spelling of the knowing.
Knowing when you, oh, whoops, when you know, not when you're know. It should be knowing when you know.
Right.
Right? And my publisher said, well, change that to find the answer. Okay. So I changed it in that chapter because the publisher insisted. But to me, it's knowing when you know. It's one thing to know the answer. And many times leaders I've worked with have known, oh, boy, there's a recession coming. Oh, boy, this product launch is not going to work. On some level, they kind of knew. They had a gut feel. But they didn't know they knew. You know, they didn't, like, I know that this is the right action. When I worked with the CEO of New York Life, Don Ross, in the summer of 87, people were complaining about his instruction to move all the stock out of the stock market. And, you know, the 80s or the go-go 80s, stock market was growing. Their competitors were using high-yield bonds to build their financial portfolios. And he just, no. They kept coming to me since I was his coach saying, what the hell is he doing? You know, and there was an article in the New York Times, time for Don to retire. Well, October of 87 is, you may know, market lost half its value. So I asked Don, I said, how did you know? Well, it just didn't pencil out. I said, no, Don, how did you know? He said, well, Paul, in my job, whenever I have to make a decision, I get experts. Ivy League, the best people in the country. We're managing $20 billion of assets here. And invariably, the experts would point me to two or three different decisions, different experts for different reasons. Whenever I've gone against my intuition, I've regretted it. I said, Leon, what do you mean by intuition? Come on. Well, there's a feeling that comes, like Dana and I were talking about, from fight or flight, that either drives you aggressively or has you run away, feeling of fear. There's also feelings of unbridled, unreasonable optimism that you can do anything and anything's possible and all of that. Both of those are just your thoughts about reality. There is a feeling, he said, that is an indicator of what's actually happening here in the flow of cause and effect. I have learned the difference. I have learned the difference. And that's the sweet spot as a leader, right? It's like on a wave, if you've ever surfed or watched a surfing movie. There is a sweet spot on the wave that maximizes your thrust forward. And that sweet spot, we talked about scenario planning earlier, changes as the wave approaches the shore. Right? So this is really important for a leader to know themselves and know where the sweet spot in the flow of cause and effect is. And you can't think your way into it generally. You have to do your homework. You have to do all this analytical stuff. But you have to be close enough to the market. You have to be close enough to what's going on in your market to feel it. You just know where it is. And then the other thing is choose a wave. You know, if you've been surfing for a year and you go to Southeast Asia and find a 40-foot wave and go, hey, I can surf that. Well, you're liable to drown. You know, you're not strong enough. You don't have the experience. You got to pick the wave. You got to pick the opportunity in the flow of cause and effect in your market that is perfect for your genius, your team's genius, your company's abilities. And you got to find that entry point, that sweet spot. And that's your power. That's conscious collaboration with the cause of flow and effect, the cause of the flow of the cause and effect, right? That's conscious. That's your power. That's where your power lies, in everything. You're trying to do something you're not good at. You haven't practiced. You haven't experienced. You're going to drown, bottom line. And you're going to wonder why. So the best leaders are obsessive about knowing themselves and being close to their market so they can feel it move. Now, once you know, so if you're the CEO or the department leader or whoever, and you just know now, you've felt it, you know that this is right. You just know it. Now you have to build commitment so people will follow you. You got to start with yourself, of course, because we all have doubts. We know something, and we go, oh, I don't know. You've got to know it yourself. And one of the key tools of building commitment, your commitment, the commitment of the teams that follow you, and the commitment of the business itself in the marketplace, is to paint this compelling picture of what that commitment looks like. People hate to walk into a dark room. Hate it. When you were a kid, you had to go in your room. You couldn't find a light switch. You're looking for a lamp. What does your mind fill the dark room with? Not pots of gold, ponies. No. Boogeymen. We fill the unknown with our fears. That's human nature. That's not going to change anytime soon. So to build commitment, you have to really, talked about scenario planning, build a detailed picture of what you know is going to happen. You have to communicate that detailed picture both in an analytic and a visceral way to your team to build their commitment. And of course to the business. So that comes into marketing, branding, so that all your clients, all your possible customers go, gee, this is it. This is what's happening. You know, my son runs a high-end restaurant in Manhattan Beach, and they're all over the press. It's the best food, greatest food, blah, blah, blah. They're all about building commitment so people come in the door, and they do. And it is good food, but, you know, they have just done a better job than a lot of other restaurants in building commitment in the marketplace. So they come. And if you can't envision it, if you can't describe it, both analytically, viscerally, emotionally, you don't know it. And you've got to go back to your intuition. You've got to go back until it is so clear to you that people will follow you into a volcano with a fire hose. Right? Hopefully it's not a volcano. So by that, it's this opportunity that unfolds only in the moment. In the flow of cause and effect, the portal to the future is in the present. In the present. That's when opportunity emerges. That's why you have to have both an intuitive and analytic feel for what's going on.
Paul, two questions came in. I hear often from business owners that the team is committed, but they don't understand, they really don't understand the responsibility the liability, et cetera, of the business owner. So they're really, people are there, but they're not fully there on the same page. So,
yeah.
So one question is how do you get people there? And the second one, another question came in, do the best leaders have direct reports, an internal circle, that are confident in speaking up on any and all aspects of the business?
Yeah, that's the team. The team behind you, your direct reports is the first team. You have to build that commitment. They have to see the raison d'etre, if you will, why it's going to work for everybody, why it's going to work for the employees, why it's going to work for the customers. And it's tough. And I think as an owner, a business owner, what's important to you may not be important to your employees. So I had one client. Business wasn't doing that well, but well enough that he could buy a 50-foot cruiser to go out in the Pacific. And he said to me, well, you know, why don't we get the team together and I'll take them out on my new boat? I go, whoa, you're laying people off. Well, we wouldn't take them. No. First of all, you're crazy to buy the boat, but now it's bought. Okay. Do not tell your employees you just spent God amount of money on a boat. So what's important to them is their livelihoods. What's important to them is their day-to-day experience, their day-to-day engagement in whatever mission they have. And you have to break that mission down into things that are important to them at their level. But that, of course, has to synchronize with the overall mission and vision of the company. So you have to be, that compelling picture has to be broken down in ways that the hourly employees understand their role in creating something that is greater than themselves, that will feed their families, that will provide a living for them. One of the primal things, all humans want to be part of something greater than themselves. As a leader, that's how you build commitment. People see they're part of something. And it can be anything, but mainly it's at the employee level. It's, gee, I want to make a living. I want to come into work, enjoy my time at work. I want my boss to be kind and understanding. I don't mind demanding as long as they're, you know, do it with kindness and understanding. That'll build commitment at every level. Got to listen.
Being empathic to your audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I was in one panel and they said, so how do you motivate millennials? And I said, well, the same way you motivate anybody. You respect them and you listen to them. You know? Oh, really? Yeah. They're humans. you got to know where their heads are at if you're going to change them from A to B. Then you got to give a compelling reason.
That's really key, Paul. You got to know where people's heads are at and the messaging, then frame it around that versus they don't have to be on the same page with your master vision with this thing that may be way over the head and could scare them, but something where it's palatable and you're measuring how to delve it out in order to get them where you need everybody to go.
Exactly.
Is that a good?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody has a role, like on a basketball team, you know. They're not as concerned with the profits that the ownership is. They want to win the game. They want to be stars. So that's what you're working on. You win championships, you get to be a star, and you get more salary and all of that.
Okay.
They're not thinking, well, gee, the ownership's not making money. They don't give a shit about that. Yeah. So responding, not reacting. I talked about this earlier. When you're in fight or flight, you tend to react. You don't want leaders who react, because if you react, you're going to go into your habits. And your habits are really hard to break. And your habits probably are not going to be effective. Some of them, sure, they'll be effective. But many of them aren't. Now, science has done a lot of study on our brains of late. And what they found is a habit is actually a pattern in the neural pathways of the brain. And the neural pathways carry the responses to life, right? So fight or flight, for example, whether you're a fighter or a flighter or somewhere in between, this is a habit that is not only psychological, it's a physical pathway. Like the difference between a side street and a freeway. So you got a bad habit, a thing you always default to. That's like a freeway in your brain. So your brain's going to default to that because it's bigger, has more experience. It's a neural pathway, a habitual pathway. That's why you got to practice responding in concert with your vision, with what you know is right. That's why you have to practice being in the moment, being present, ignoring and mitigating your habitual, repetitive thought patterns, and looking at the sweet spot in the wave of cause and effect and responding to that, not responding to your fears and habits, and even good habits, you know, that used to be good or no longer good. I mean, I've worked with a lot of retiring CEOs, you know, at the board's request. And honestly, they don't get it why everything they're doing is not working. Because, gee, it's worked all my life. Well, unfortunately, the flow of cause and effect changes year to year. And if you're operating habitually as a leader or a team or a company, you know, you're on your way out. You've got to practice letting go, mitigating your habitual behaviors, and living in response, which requires, you know, a deep level of presence. You know, the next slide talks about mastering inner stillness. It's the core of everything. You know, if you got to clear the static out of your head, you got to clear the static out of your company, the gossip, the fears. And how you do that is this commitment to something greater, this clear stillness that you exhibit as a leader. I always use a hurricane as an example. The center of a hurricane is dead still. And when the center breaks up, the eye breaks up, the power of the hurricane breaks up. And the same is true for a leader or for a team of leaders. You face a team that's committed and present, it's an intimidating experience. Wow, these guys, they are going to win the Super Bowl this year. You know? Wow. No doubts. There's nothing going on in their heads. Now, since they're so present, they are going to react. They're going to respond to reality in a creative way as opposed to an habitual way. And how you get there is we're all different. We all have different ways of being stressed. There are a lot of different ways we can reduce stress. Some people meditate. I meditate. Some people cycle. I cycle. Some people run. Some people swim. Some people board. Whatever you do. One of the radio hosts I was talking to says, I always do my thinking in the shower. I always get a good idea in the shower. Well, yeah, it's a pretty quiet place, and the water's pouring all over you, pretty peaceful. All the outside world is blocked out. If you're not mastering your inner stillness as a leader and as a team of leaders, you're going to be seeing your thoughts and your habits versus the actual flow of reality, actual flow of cause and effect. So, you know, there's all kinds of techniques. Pick one or two so that you can really be clear. And if you've done all the things that I said earlier, have a clear plan, a clear commitment, you know, action plans, team around you that's committed to the vision, that's committed to the way of doing things, you're going to have less worry. You're going to have less circular thoughts, if you will, in your head, because You've done your homework. So that's another part of it. Do your homework. Right? But then, you know, you have a plan, you have a battle plan. Any general will tell you the battle plan rarely survives the battle. But you've got to go in there with a plan or you're not even going to have a chance at winning the battle. But once you have that plan, that scenario plan, whatever it is, then you got to be really present because the flow of the market, the flow of cause and effect, you can't control. It has momentum. It has momentum. And you got to find your sweet spot in that flow. That's the secret to leadership, secret to inventing your future.
So, Paul, you summarized very nicely there. So we get off the call here or the program, and then somebody has to make a quick decision. They have not had time to meditate this morning or work out or box or bike ride or do any of these things.
Whatever, yeah.
Whatever it is.
How
okay. And they have to make a decision.
Yeah. Okay. Excuse me, I got something. So, first of all, these practices, meditation, they're cumulative. They're cumulative. The more you do it, the clearer your head is, the more you are opening up new neural pathways that are effective. So it doesn't happen overnight. Right, so if you've never meditated and you say, oh, shit, I got a big problem this afternoon, let me meditate. Well, it's going to help if you sit quietly and let go of your thoughts. But these are cumulative things you got to practice. But if you've got a decision and you're in a place where you don't know, then get input from the people around you. Get input from somebody who might know. Take your time. Don't make the decision right away. Find ways to reflect on the possibilities, on the pros and cons. And question your first, your habitual responses. If this looks like something you've done before, just question it. I'm not saying it won't work. I'm saying question it. That might lead to an insight. Because what you're looking for is insight into the true nature of things, insight into the true nature of what's happening in the moment. And if you can just snap into the present and just listen to what's going on around you and challenge your own thoughts, you got a shot. But it doesn't happen overnight. You got to practice these things.
So is it the right decision for this moment versus going off a knee-jerk reaction, this is what I've done in the past, which could cause more problems than anything else?
Yeah, and it could be right, but if you haven't done the practice, if you're not really working on yourself as a leader and you're just starting this, then it's best to hesitate and just question what you would normally do and see what the other side of that is. And as you go through that thought process, you might go, you know what? I think that'll work. And then share it with your team. You know, say, hey, here are my thoughts. What we would normally do, what if we did this? And you got to be open. Trouble with habit is we always want to be right about it. Humans hate to be wrong.
Good point.
You kind of got to let go of that and say, you know, okay, I'm willing to be wrong about this.
And it's okay to be wrong. Paul, a question just came in, then we're going to close down the segment. We'll open up the line. What are your keys to practicing strategic planning? What are the components of strategic planning that should be practiced?
Okay. A long answer. We'll do a whole session on that. But the first thing, just working with one of my clients, is you got to know the market, the people who are going to buy your products. You really have to know them, know what they want, know what they're looking for. Most companies are big on sharing their process, or new companies have a new technology, blah, blah, blah. This is the biggest mistake people make. They start, I'm working with a company right now, and it's a marvelous technology, and that's all they can talk about. And say, you know what? The investors in the marketplace does not give a damn about your technology. They want to know the impact on them. They want to know the impact on EBITDA, and the customers want to know the impact on their profit and loss statement. So a good strategic plan starts with a real visceral understanding of the flow of cause and effect in your market, with a real deep understanding of your team's capabilities to address that, and with your own understanding of yourself and your ability then to find a window of opportunity in that market. Most strategic plans skip over that. And it's deadly. Once you know that, then yeah, you got to put plans together. Sure, you got to go, all right, this is what we think. This is what the market's telling us. This is what our capabilities are. What are the steps to entering the market? What are the steps to increasing sales? What are the steps to increasing margin? Whatever you decide is a key element. Then you got to lay it out. Each, you know, usually you have, you know, increasing EBITDA, increasing market share, increasing sales, increasing efficiency. Each of those should be a part of your strategic plan, but those should lead into the overall objective of entering the market, increasing sales, building a brand, whatever. That's the sequence, but that's a very long conversation.
Okay.
So if that's helpful.
Okay. And we're going to do a program on scenario planning. Today was to focus on decision-making, because it's so tough for most individuals. So my takeaway from this...
You got to start with this.
Yeah. My takeaway before we open up the line here in just a few minutes is every leader needs to carve out some quiet time.
Oh, yeah.
And not just wake up in the morning and start doing a checkoff list, but carve out time for thinking.
Yeah. Absolutely. Clear your head.
Okay.
Get a sense of what's happening around you, first with yourself, then with your team, then with your business.
Ooh. Say that one more time. First with yourself?
First, you got to find out what's happening around you. First with yourself, your psychology, how you feel this morning. Second, with your team. Where's your team's at? Where are they at? And then with the marketplace, with your business. How's that? What's really happening there?
And we did Paul, you've done an open line in the past on preparing your thought for the day. So if anyone would like to get a copy of that, you can either go onto our site to the event tab and scroll through, or you can email me and we'll get you a copy of that. Paul, any closing thoughts before we open the lineup?
No, I'm good. I mean, I said all I can say is, there is no substitute for practice.
Okay.
That's my closing thought.
Okay, perfect. We're going to open the line in just a second here. I want to thank Paul for being on our program, as always. You'll see on the screen on May 17th, which is our next open line program, Doing Business in China and Exporting Opportunities. So please sign up. Invite others from your staff, colleagues, friends, association members. We'll also be sending out the PowerPoint for today and today's audio in the next few days. So if everyone could please hold the line, I will turn off the recording feature. I want to thank you, first of all, for everyone attending today and being a part of Open Line. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let me know. So let me put everybody on hold for a second, turn the recording feature off, and then we'll open the line up. Please stand by.